Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfort. Today's show is about feet. If you're a runner, a hiker, a skier, a skater, if you do almost anything active, I should have your attention. Because when your feet are happy, you are. And when they're messed up, your fun is over. First, we're talking about getting up and active and how your skeleton and muscles will thank you. Next, a cute segment with a couple who leads hikes in Anchorage. After that, an interview with a podiatrist who is also a runner with lots of tips for staying healthy. We'll have that and more in the next hour. Stay tuned. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm with Ann Thomas, who is a physical therapist, and she sent me something that kind of got my attention. I've long thought about the fact that, well, the more you run, you're going to wear out your knees, or all the different injuries you can have as an active person, sort of as being a downside of being super active and working out all the time. And what Ann turned me on to is it's kind of the opposite, right? There's a lot of physical problems that you avoid by being active, and there's sort of a use it or lose it with your body. So I asked Ann to come in. She has body imbalance physical therapy, and she also has a shoe store and a gym, which is all out there in Palmer, right, Ann?
It is, correct. Yeah. It's in the Kozlowski building, which is a very old building, has survived several earthquakes, and so I feel pretty safe in the building.
Right. And Ann was kind enough to come in and talk about some of these topics. So there, obviously, back problems are one of the main things that we worry about as we get older. And I'm kind of terrified of hurting my back because I've seen so many people their almost lives are ruined by bad back problems and they can't do anything fun. But what you were saying before the show is that sort of that you can avoid some back problems by being active.
Absolutely. And I would probably say that for sure, about 8 out of 10 people in the U.S. are going to experience some kind of back pain in their life. And that might be a twinge when picking up a box or a slow weekend to recover. Or it might be several days off of work or months off of work. And not many of us can take that much time off of work. So I think being physically active, keeping your back strong is going to keep you active. And it also requires mobility and strength to do that. And it's sort of you've got to use it, otherwise you lose it type thing.
Yeah. So what's the connection between, say, working out 3 or 4 times a week and not hurting your back? They don't seem like automatically connected.
Well, your muscles require input in order to get strong. I would probably say your body will respond to the tension and the forces that you put into it, and appropriately dosed, then your body will respond appropriately. If you overload the system, then you will have injury. If you underload the system, especially in a work environment where we're sitting a lot, if you underload, then you will end up with weaknesses and inflexibilities, which then put extra strain on other areas of your kinetic chain, and consequently, you end up reaching for something and aggravating a disc or reaching for something and pulling a shoulder joint. Or
so we're always focusing on overloading because you make the connection more clearly that you've done something and then you're hurt, or you've worked out too hard and then you're hurt. But actually, sort of the time spent in the computer in front of the TV where nothing is happening is where you're building up that risk.
Absolutely. And I think maybe one of the things that's said now is sitting is kind of the new smoking. And so by not using your muscles, they don't get stronger. Muscles are time, or I guess energy efficient, in terms of they respond to the input that's put into them. And so if you don't ask them to work, then they won't work. And consequently, if you are weak, then generally what happens is you also get a little bit stiff. And your kinetic chain needs to be mobile to be functional. And so if you become weak and stiff, that chain starts to work a little inefficiently. And so consequently, you land yourself up with some tissue trauma, which leads to pain and inflammation, which then leads to joints not working appropriately, which leads to continued pain and inflammation. And the cycle continues unless you stop it.
So strong muscles protect the back.
Absolutely.
And so that's something you could work on in the gym as well, and building up your core muscles and sort of avoiding injuries that way, so that when you are working out or doing more strenuous activity, you have more protection. True?
Absolutely. So the back is a really interesting connection of joints. And I would probably say that, yes, If your back is weak, then you're more likely to be injured. But the back is connected to your hips. It's connected, you know, there's a
the
lot of
bones connected to the hip bone.
Exactly. And so consequently, just working out your back muscles does not necessarily solve any of your problems. You've got to be working out your abdominal muscles, your hip muscles. And in fact, a study that was pulled from for the newsletter talked about a research that was done on people with back pain. And there were two groups. And one of the groups was looking at just purely lumbar stabilization exercises. And then which would be muscles that were directed purely to your back.
Okay.
And then there was another group that was also put through the same exercises directed to the back, but they were also given exercises for the hips. And both groups did well because they both had exercises, but the group that had hip exercises as well did better than the group that only had back exercises. And so, granted, there's many other factors that fall into that, but the main message, I think, is that that working out the entire body is beneficial. And also for back health, really, your hips, bottom, pelvis are really a keystone to your back health. And if you have mobility and strength within your hips, it takes some of the forces that come into the body and redirects them into those areas versus purely into your lower back.
Well, when you talk about getting more strength in your hips, are you talking about you need to go into the gym and do these particular exercises in these machines, or are you talking about like go cycling, go running, go skiing, or both?
I think both. So I think, you know, up in Alaska, we have a very active lifestyle. And so a lot of the reason why we live here is because we can get outside and enjoy, whether it's the summer or in the wintertime. But you need to be strong to do that. And I think oftentimes people get out and be, they're weekend warriors and then suffer the consequences through the week without realizing that really to spend a little bit of time in the gym and do focused exercises on specific areas of their body will enable their weekends to be much less painful and much more enjoyable. Having said that, I really do recommend that people have a professional look at their body, whether it's a physical therapist, a chiropractor, a personal trainer, but somebody who can look at your movement patterns, maybe run you through a couple of tests. There are a few of them out there. We use a functional movement screen that allows you to it's one of the screenings that we do, but it certainly enables somebody to really look at you objectively and to look at your patterns of movement, look at where you're strong, where you're weak, things that you may not see yourself, and then direct you to exercises that are appropriate for what's going on with your body and the history of your body. Just to kind of walk straight into an exercise program, it may not be the right exercise program for you. It may be dosed inappropriately. There is certainly, as I had said earlier, you've got to dose your exercises appropriately. And so that dosing follows a very specific sequence. And if you follow the sequence, then really there's success at the end. If you don't follow the sequence, then you basically can set yourself up for an imbalance. And consequently, that can then lead to, you might have the skill to do the activity that you like, but you don't have the strength. And so skill without strength does set you up for some injury, whereas you're looking for strength and skill.
Yeah. Ann Thomas is with me on Outdoor Explorer. She has Body Imbalance Physical Therapy. She also has a performance footwear store and a gym out there at the Kozlowski Building in Palmer. My name is Charles Wolforth. This concept of balance is an important one. It's making sure that you have not focused everything on one part of your body, on one set of muscles, right? And so that you've developed the whole body so that you don't hurt you don't have a weak link that gets
Correct.
Hurt. So, and you feel like you need to really have some professional guidance in order to find those weak links.
Yes, I do. I think with anything that we do in our life, whether you're looking for financial health, whether you're looking for sort of marriage health, or, you know, I think that there are so many things that we do in our life that having somebody look at you objectively, somebody who has been trained really to understand movement patterns and to give you an objective sense of really where you can strengthen and improve on your skill set. And it would is the difference between being a weekend warrior, suffering the consequences through the week, or really enjoying yourself and maybe setting yourself up for some activities or adventures that you really had never thought you would manage, but now you can because you're appropriately trained.
Now, I want to hear your opinion of this, because this is my own pet theory, but that there are different times when you need to be thinking about how you are more thoughtful in your exercise regime or just your physical activity. When you're in your teens, 20s, you can kind of get to do whatever you want, and there's really not much limitation. But as you get older, you have to be more thoughtful. And also, as you're increasing the intensity of what you're doing, you have to be thoughtful. In other words, if you're coming off the couch and want to do stuff, then that's a really good time to get some guidance. And as you're getting older, it's important to get guidance because your body is sort of, you have a thinner margin for error, if you will. Do you agree with that?
I definitely do agree with that, Charles. So a couple of things that I'll respond to that on. One is we all have an energy reserve bank to allow for tissue healing. And that energy reserve bank sort of changes as you get a little older. And so being very mindful and intentional on training your body actually will allow you to be much more active and adventurous through the whole course of your life. But you do need to be mindful and intentional on that to preserve that energy bank. So then if you do have a small injury, you recover from that. And then the other thing that I was going to say, people really do underestimate, I think, how long it does take to create a base and then to train for something. So oftentimes people will think that they have a goal of maybe doing a marathon. And so they're going to try and train for that for 6 weeks. Well, it is possible to walk a marathon or run a marathon maybe in 6 weeks, but your success with that really is much higher if you give yourself a good base and then you give yourself 6 months to train for that. So allowing yourself a good base time will give your tissue the time to accommodate and to tolerate the forces that you're putting through it. And so that comes with training, mindful training and intentional training.
On the flip side, sort of, it sounds like 6 months, that's so much. But on the flip side, it's a lifetime asset that you've got. In talking to Keegan Randall, who was sitting in that chair not too long ago, she talked about how it's always additive. I mean, mm-hmm. you're always, the next year you're even better. The next year after that, you're even better. And so it's, once you build this base, you've built in some long-term physical fitness.
Absolutely. And I was just actually thinking of even just saying, you know, even as an Olympic athlete, they go through years and years of base training that you've never really known about, where mm-hmm. they're training in maybe smaller competitions. They've spent their life training to that final event that you might see them win a gold.
It's a decade.
Right. It's decades. They've spent a long time mm-hmm. setting the base. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, even if you're somebody who is setting yourself up to have a healthy lifestyle, you don't need to have a goal to run a marathon or to do a 100-mile bike race. The goal can be that you just have an enjoyable time being outside, and that still needs a base.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it still needs intentional training, and so that you can protect yourself from injury and enjoy yourself with your family and your dogs.
Yeah. I want to throw something at you that I did not prepare you for, so your eyes are growing wide, but I'm sure you can answer it. Coming from the perspective of sometime weekend warrior, it's first thing in the spring, you run out and do Bird Ridge and you come back and you feel kind of okay the next day, but then 48 hours after you've done this overly strenuous thing, you can't walk down a flight of stairs. You're in mm-hmm. agony. What is it about exercise that 48 hours after seems to be the time when you really feel it?
That is referring to delayed onset muscle soreness.
Mm-hmm.
And when you run down a hill, you're creating some tissue trauma. And so that pain that you're experiencing is a result of that tissue trauma that maybe you didn't feel on the day that you did the exercise, but the next day it's a little bit painful, and then it's a little bit painful more than that the second day, and the third day might even be worse. And so it's just a process of the tissue having been traumatized, and then the inflammatory process that is a consequence of that, and then the subsequent healing process.
It's just the time it takes your body to sort of
recover,
let you know that this has happened.
Exactly. Yeah. Go through the inflammatory process. So that is definitely reduced by training.
Uh-huh.
So so if you train appropriately, then you will experience less of the delayed onset muscle soreness. In addition to good hydration, the appropriate electrolytes, and even the appropriate recovery product, whether it's recovery shake or extra blueberries in your milkshake when you have breakfast the next day, just more antioxidants and then gentle exercise days following as well.
I've been told that if you take some of those recovery things on board immediately after the activity, that's a good idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because it's your body is, like I said, responding to the inflammation, or at least responding to the trauma with inflammation, and anything that you can do to essentially move along that healing process will help decrease the pain.
Okay. Now, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about dogs, and and this comes under the category of folks who might be listening and they're kind of armchair outdoors people. In other words, they're really not doing much, but maybe they'd like to be more active, or at least get the benefits that you're talking about of activity, which are lifelong, better joints, better back, better health. You don't have to be working out at a gym 5 days a week. You don't have to be running up Bird Ridge. You could just take the dog for a walk. I mean, you could start easy.
Absolutely. And actually, related to this would be some recommendation from the American Heart Association, which really is recommending activity so that you can sort of steer away from number one killers, which would be a stroke or heart disease. Mm-hmm. And so their recommendations are that you get 150 minutes a week. And with that can be broken into 30 minutes five times a week, or even 3 10-minute sessions a day. So you can take the time as you
like.
And
how are you defining a session, or what level of cardio do you need to get to for it to count?
Right. And so that's where I was going to say it actually doesn't have to be this vigorous level of running up a hill, but really taking a dog out for a walk. And so that's, you know, a conversation pace where you can have your dog walk and talk with a friend or on the phone if you like. And so doing that, there are ways that you can make sure that you're in the appropriate heart rate zone, where a heart rate monitor makes sure that you're going at an appropriate zone for heart health. But really being able to just get out there and walk your dog is going to be appropriate.
Yeah. So if you can't get 2.5 hours a week just of getting outside or even inside and walking around, then you really are a sad case. There's got to be that much time in your life.
And I think that's where, you know, people say that they get very busy and there's no time. But really, if you can chunk activities in your life, getting out and exercising getting out and walking will help your back, because they've actually also seen that when you walk, even before you voluntarily move the muscles in your back muscles are working. So you're working your back, which brings us back to the conversation that we had earlier. You're working your heart, and people don't need to worry that it has to be sort of a 45-minute hour session every day, and that really it can be a short time. Like I said, you can chunk it where you can grab a friend, grab your kids, listen to a favorite podcast, listen to the radio.
Mm-hmm. Or even walk to work.
Yeah, walk to work, ditch the stairs. I mean, excuse me, ditch the car. Take the stairs.
Yeah.
And park a little further away from the grocery store.
And so if you think about like working out as, well, you got to put on special clothes and you've got to like go somewhere special and pay a fee or drive somewhere, come back, take a shower. You know, it takes hours to do the whole thing. It doesn't have to be that at all.
It can be park a little further away, take 10 minutes to get to the grocery store. That's going to be perfect.
Just be mindful that you're getting that 2.5 hours a week at least.
Absolutely. Yeah. And not only improving your heart health, reducing the risk of any kind of stroke, heart disease, improving your mental health, improving relationships with your friends, reducing stress. There are so many benefits to just moving your body a little bit better.
Yeah. Good place to stop. Thanks so much, Ann, for being with us.
Well, thanks, Charles. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, Ann Thomas is Body and Balance Physical Therapy out in Palmer, right?
Correct.
Yes, and she was with us today on Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Wolforth. Stay with us. It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. And in the studio now, I have guests who are with Alaska Outdoors, a hiking club. It's been around for 15 years, kind of casual, fun hiking club. They met each other on the club, and now they're married. So quite a bit of history here to talk about. Toshi Hamazaki is here. Thanks for being with us, Toshi.
You're welcome.
And Pamela Maslick. Thanks for being here, Pamela.
Thanks for having us.
So, Toshi, maybe you start and just tell us, what does the club do?
Well, we are a public social club. We meet every Monday and Thursday from 6:30 to 8 o'clock. And then we hike all over the Anchorage. Uh-huh. Monday is always a beginners. So we go to the Kincaid Park or the White Trails so that everyone can line up and then, you know, chat all the way. Mm-hmm. And then Thursdays, we go to the, you know, the much more the Chugach Mountain side so that it's going to be a bit harder.
Okay.
But still have a, you know, the social aspect to it.
Yeah. So it's an evening hike, so it's not going to be like a super long hike.
No. We try to make the this hike to available for the regular people who work, but next day, every day, so that we don't want to be there until midnight, mm-hmm. even in summer. So just, you know, this be about hour and a half, just, you know, the to relax after, you know, the work, long work days, you know, uh-huh. just have a, you know, the relaxing moment, you know, walking and hiking with other people.
Very nice. And so you kind of get to meet new people as well.
Yes.
And that's how you guys met, eh, Pamela?
That is true.
Tell me how that came about.
I actually had a good friend of mine who knew I was just kind of out on my own and biking and just running around in the woods and said, hey, there's this hiking group. I think you should join. And I think you'll really like the leader. So
it was a setup.
So it was funny. I joined a couple of times and, you know, I'm always wearing a hat and dark glasses because it's sunny out. And then we were at a charity. And I ran into him again, and then we kind of hit it off there. And he ended up carrying my wine to the car that I had bought. but then he didn't recognize me at first because I didn't have my hat and sunglasses on.
Which hike was it?
I think we were in Bicentennial Park for one of them because I biked there and tied my bike up and then went on a hike.
Yeah, cool. So how many people are usually out on these, Toshi? Is it a big group?
Well, the Mondays we have, you know, sometimes, you know, starting from 15 in the winters to 40 sometimes.
Wow.
Yes.
We never see bears.
That's quite bad. Yeah.
And then Thursdays from 10 to, you know, 15. Uh-huh. That's about our range.
For sort of the more challenging hikes,
yes.
Is Thursdays. Yeah. So what would be an example of a more challenging hike you'd try to do in an hour and a half?
More the challenging hike. We would say the most challenging one is like a Little O'Malley Peak. Mm-hmm. That may take about 2 hours. So mm-hmm. we are looking about the maximum, you know, elevation gain of about 1,000 feet.
Mm-hmm. So it's
the hardest.
You're not mountaineering here. Yeah.
No, it's not mountaineering.
Yeah.
But we will also tell people we're going up the mountain and we'll say it's turnaround time if you want to get back by 8. And some people will say, oh, no, I want to go to the top. And so some people will take you at their extra time.
Is it always new people, Pamela? I mean, is it like you get to meet new people all the time?
More new people in the summer, that's for sure. And I don't know. It's been, you know, now it's been quite a few years, 8 or 9 years that I've been there, and I've seen it cycle. So we'll have a group of people and they'll be with us for years, and some of the older hikers would leave and then some new hikers come in and mm-hmm. they stay with us for 4 or 5 years. But we've been really stable with our core group of about 20 for 3 or 4 years now.
Uh-huh.
And then every year we get probably 100 people who joined us for the first time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you enjoy that?
Some of them just stay. And then some of them are, I'm just a visitor from Oregon and out of countries. And then mm-hmm. went to the visitor centers and they suggested your group.
I think that's a great idea because whenever I'm traveling, I don't want to be just meeting like the tourist people. I want to meet some real people. And here are your real people out there, right?
Yeah. Yes. And then many, you know, the older people, and then some new people who'd never been in Anchorage, mm-hmm. just came into Anchorage. I have no idea where to start.
Right.
And then, you know, the also older people, and, you know, once active hiking years are over, and I just want to be social. Mm-hmm. And then some people are just, you know, I've been just going to the same place over and over, and then coming to our hike and then, whoa, I've never been to this, you know, trail.
Right.
So
what did you start this, Toshi?
Yes.
15 years ago? What gave you the idea to start it?
Well, I always like hiking. Uh-huh. And also that I just came to Alaska about after 3 years of those, and then I finally got my dog. And then, so having the dog, and I have to take dog out. And if I'm going out, you know, to take a dog, why not having the group?
And then I guess it helps you make friends too, right? I mean, because you have so many new people.
Yes, and of course,
and
I
you got
was
your wife
singles,
that way, so
yeah.
That would help.
Of course, I was single, and then every day the book said that, well, you know, the if you want to meet somebody, then you have to, you know, join the join the group, and
right,
then
right.
If you are not, if you can't find a group, make bomb, you know, build a new one, and then start. That's what I did.
Yeah. So, Pamela, do you know of any other couples who have formed out of this activity?
We actually have a few people that, you know, have dated. Mm-hmm. On not that they've always stayed together, but, you know, we've had different people. And even if they've just become really good friends, so sometimes we have small groups that'll start and they'll hike together on the weekends with three or four people. And that's what we really like. Some of our older hikers have actually formed groups outside of this group.
Oh, spin-offs,
so that,
huh?
Like, well, they're retired, and so they do a Wednesday hike, or one guy just told me, I hope you don't mind, but, you know, I have this other group that, you know, we just stick in town, and we just do leisurely walks, and I'm like, no, that's great, you know. Sometimes our hikes, which are generally 3 to 4 miles, are just too fast, and so they just wanted a more leisurely pace.
Yeah, yeah. So how do people find out about this? What's the do you have a Facebook page or something?
We have Facebook, and then we have website, and also we always advertise on the newspapers.
Okay. So we'll have that on outdoorexplorer.org. They can find your link to you through that on today's show. And there's no fee, or there's no, you just show up, right?
No fees, but just only about, you know, the whatever.
We ask for a donation of a dollar.
Okay.
and it is a donation. Since we do throw like annual picnics, and open up our house on Thanksgiving for people, anyone who wants to stop by, which is actually really interesting how many people we can get into our house. But we have an annual donation and then you get one of our mugs with our logo on there. So
this has turned into a big part of your life in terms of having picnics and Thanksgiving and everything else.
It's definitely busy, but you know, there's a lot of benefits. You know, we have our hikers watch our house when we leave the country,
and
they watch our dogs, and you know, everyone really looks out after each other. So
it's they say, like, when you go to Alaska, you have to make your own family, right? So you're kind of doing that through this. Yeah.
We have a really big family.
Hundreds.
Hundreds of them.
Yeah, very neat. So so people should just check the Facebook page, the website, find out where it is, show up, give you a dollar, and they're in business.
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Well, I hope people do. And again, it's Monday and Wednesday night.
Monday and Thursday.
Monday and Thursday night.
All year. When it's -10, -20.
You never miss one, huh?
Well, we haven't had date night in a long time. We call that date night when no one else shows up for the hike.
Oh, okay.
But that hasn't occurred in 3 or 4 years. So.
Wow.
Yeah, only time we canceled was that when the road is so icy, so you can't even get it to the trailhead.
It's not safe, right, yeah.
It's totally unsafe.
So, and do you know how people can network with some of these other groups in town? I guess there's that meetup website. That's one way to do it.
Yes.
Do you sort of network to them through your Facebook page or anything?
No, actually, we don't. But I know that I have a couple of friends, here's the happy hikers, here is such and such.
Yeah.
And then everything is kind of word of mouth.
Yeah.
Sounded to me that, you know, they don't advertise, and they're about 10, 15 people.
You just got to make it, so get your tentacles out, right?
Yes.
It's all about networking.
Well, sometimes
the
they don't want more people
right,
in their group.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, we post our information on our website so that they look at our website so that we don't duplicate on the same trailhead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's happened occasionally, and then, you know, you end up with like 25 cars at a trailhead.
Too many
that
people.
Holds
right,
five.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for coming in. I think this is really fun. I'm really glad you're doing it, and it sounds like fun. Pamela Maslick and Toshi Hamazaki are Alaska Outdoors. Hikes 2 days a week, Monday, Thursday night. Check them out through outdoorexplorer.org. Thanks for being here today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us. Outdoor Explorer will continue.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Well, as we talk about running and fitness and all of its benefits today, I decided to also bring in someone who could talk about keeping your feet healthy. Boy, your feet are next to your brain. I think your feet are probably the most important organ in terms of running and hiking and just getting out there and doing all the things we love doing. And that when they're messed up, you're really messed up. And I found our guest because she's a sponsor of a lot of races in town, a lot of foot races, and I'm always on those websites. And she has Dr. Heather Kaufman has Anchorage Foot and Ankle Clinic. She's a podiatrist, and she takes care of runners' feet and all of our outdoor Alaskans' feet for all kinds of problems. And is a runner herself, so she can kind of identify with some of these things. And Heather, you were saying before we started that you've had some foot problems yourself as a runner, and so you can kind of get how frustrating that is, right? I mean, it's just the worst.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's nothing like being in the middle of a long run and suddenly, you know, you can barely put any weight on your foot and you're hobbling, you know, 3, 4, 5 miles back home.
And in your case, you know what's probably going on in your foot.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what are some of the main problems that we run into? I know as runners, we run into a lot of things that are around sort of overuse or or sort of repetitive use and that can cause injuries that can be very painful.
Oh, absolutely. I think the most common thing I see in runners is plantar fasciitis. And that's inflammation of the fascia, the plantar fascia on the bottom of the foot, which is just a structure that helps to support the arch. And it's not uncommon. It's kind of an overuse injury to get inflammation of this structure that causes severe heel pain, can actually be fairly debilitating. I've actually had it myself, so I know how bad it can be. And it really can stop you in your tracks and you know, make walking and certainly running, you know, very painful, if not impossible. And a lot of times I'll see patients who, you know, they come in, they have plantar fasciitis, and because they're walking differently on their foot, trying to kind of guard against the pain that they have in the bottom of their heel, now they're getting other injuries elsewhere. They're getting tendonitis on the other side of their foot because they've been, you know, walking to the outside of their foot, stretching that tendon out, and they're getting metatarsal pain, which is pain in the long bone behind the toe, or midfoot pain, joint pain, ankle sprains. I mean, it's really amazing how, you know, one injury to one part of the foot, compensation from that, just leads to a whole, you know, cascade of other problems in the foot as well.
So it's an inflammation. So that means, I guess it suggests to me that when the inflammation goes away, you would be okay. So it's curable in that sense.
It is curable. 90% of the time to maybe 95% of the time, it can be cured without surgery. And I usually, I generally start with stretching exercises and ice, anti-inflammatories. I do a lot of cortisone, like steroid injections, which can be very helpful. And really orthotics and, you know, orthotics in good shoes. I mean, that's really the key. Stretching, super, super important, but just getting that right orthotic support in your shoe, really controlling the mechanics, controlling the way your foot works. Now, your foot's the cornerstone of the entire body, and if the foot is out of whack, and if the foot is injured in some way, or having to make compensations for a poor biomechanic structure, then everything else, all the other joints, all the way up even to the neck, are also going to suffer. So what orthotics do is they balance the foot. They control the mechanics of the foot so that you don't there's something called pronation, which is kind of a flattening down of the foot, a twisting of the foot, so you don't overpronate, or so you don't overstretch the fascia or get excessive motion through joints. It really just controls those mechanics, distributes weight more evenly across the entirety of the foot, so that the foot actually is a better cornerstone, is a better structure for the rest of the body to weight bear upon.
So it's not that running is bad for you per se, but running in the wrong shoe, or having the wrong running technique could lead to to this plantar fasciitis?
It can, yeah. Shoes are really important. I have a lot of runners that come in and, you know, I'll look at their shoes and I'll ask them, I'm like, you know, how old are your shoes? And they're, oh, they're a couple years old. Yeah, shoes are really good for about 6 months, 400 miles, something like that. They're just not good for many years. And I think what happens is, you know, a good running shoe is expensive, and I get that.
And also, they don't necessarily look like they're worn out.
Correct.
On the outside, but
exactly.
If they're old, that you can't see inside.
Correct.
Inside the sole.
Absolutely. I think one of the big mistakes I see with a lot of runners is, A, they keep their shoes too long.
Mm-hmm.
B, they wear the same shoe day after day after day. They don't switch them out. You know, shoes need rebound. They need that chance to kind of rebound. They get compressed when you wear them. And they need to decompress. So I always tell my runners, I'm like, find a shoe that you like, find a good shoe, buy two pair and switch them out, maybe even three pair, but switch them out every other day. Try and keep track of the mileage that you're putting on your shoe. I mean, really, a shoe is, like I said, good for about 400 miles, and then it's pretty much done, which, you know, is unfortunately a little bit disconcerting when you know that you're going to pay
$120
$120 and that $120 for, you know, kind of a basic running shoe, and, you know, up to $200 or more. But, you know, that's really...
It's a lot cheaper than spending a lot of time at the doctor, or even worse, just not being able to do what you want to do anymore.
Exactly. It's a heck of a lot, you know, a lot cheaper than surgery.
So are there other tips about choosing a shoe, or if we're thinking about a trail hiking and stuff like that, and choosing a boot that is going to protect your ankle and protect your foot? Because I kind of feel like I go in to try them on. This one kind of feels okay. I don't really know any more than that.
Right. So there's a few things. First of all, you always want to look at the shape of the shoe. So if you flip the shoe over and look at the bottom, that's called the last. And you want to make sure, does the shape of the shoe look like the shape of your foot? Certain shoes, some of them have what's called a C-shaped last. If you turn them over, they kind of had a C-shape or like a kidney bean shape to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if your foot's not shaped like that, it's probably not going to feel real good on your foot. So you want to look at the last shape of the shoe. There's different types of shoes. There's like neutralization shoes. There's different shoes for shock absorption, different shoes for high pronators, for supinators. And so you really, you know, you may need like a neutralization shoe if you're someone who, you know, perhaps over pronates. Maybe you need like a neutralization shoe. You want to look at, when you look at the outer sole of the shoe, especially towards the back, how far out does it extend? How far does the thickness, especially from the back, that's called the heel counter, how far does that extend around? Does it have a high, and it's kind of hard to explain without sort of a visual,
right.
But, you know, sort of looking at the outside of the shoe, how much, I guess for lack of a better word, bulk or support does it have on the inside border of the shoe versus the outside? Does it have a big flare on the bottom of it? Is it flared out very wide? Is that going to give you more support? Or is it maybe flared to one side and not to the other? And those are different aspects of a shoe that can, those are different ways to try and prevent, for example, over pronating or over supinating. And I know that probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense on the
it's
on the radio.
How you're landing and like sort of which side of the foot you're landing on. And I guess that if you go to a really Skookum specialty shoe store, and I mean Skinny Raven is obviously one in Anchorage where they just sell running shoes, and I'm sure there's others. They could put you on a treadmill and actually watch how your feet land and give you a recommendation based on that.
I send so many patients to Skinny Raven because they really do know their shoes. They know them inside out, upside down, and backwards, and they can do a gait analysis. They can watch how you're walking, how you're running, and really get the right shoe for the person. Other things that I recommend patients do is buy the shoes at the end of the day. You know, be as active as you want to be, and then at the end of the day, buy your shoes. Because your feet swell through the day. They spread out through the day. So if you buy your shoe first thing in the morning, your shoe in the evening is going to probably be a little bit too tight. So, you know, make sure that you have... You want to allow for that kind of swelling and spread of the foot. Always, with the shoe, stand up in the shoe, and then use your thumb at the end of the shoe, what's called the toe box, which is where your toes sit inside of the shoe. When you're standing, you want to have a thumb's width of distance between the end of your longest toe, which may or may not be your big toe, and the end of the shoe. Mm. Because as you're running, your foot is going to slip, you know, slip forward and backward in the shoe. And the last thing you want is to have the end of your toe bouncing against the end of the shoe. Yeah.
And then you end up with black toes. Which
you end
I've
up
had.
Losing your toenails, and that doesn't feel so good. Yeah. So you want to make sure you have that room. Make sure the widest part of the shoe hits the widest part of your foot. You know, I see patients that they just completely buy the wrong size shoe, and now they've got the widest part of the shoe is the widest part of their foot is kind of in a narrower part of the shoe, and it just doesn't feel so good.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that as far as the depth of the shoe, especially a lot of runners tend to have what's called hammer toes, which are these contracted toes where they kind of stick up and the knuckles kind of bend and they don't sit down flat. That takes up more room in the shoe. If you don't have a shoe that has enough space in the toe box, top to bottom, depth in it, then you can rub and irritate the knuckles on your toes, and that can cause calluses and blisters and in really severe cases, even erosions through the skin, which is called an ulcer. So you just want to really make sure that the shoe, you know, fits you not just in length and width, but also in depth. You just want
Can you sort of like when you if you're a regular runner and you've got a regular sort of a workout and you get a new shoe and you try it the first week, your foot ought to feel great at the end of the week, right? And if it doesn't, maybe there's a problem.
Correct.
Yeah. Because of some of these things, it seems like it takes time for them to build up.
It does. And, you know, everyone talks about, you know, you need a break in the shoe, but really you shouldn't really have to break in a shoe. A shoe should fit appropriately and feel good from the time that you buy it.
Especially these modern ones now that are absolutely. So engineered. Yeah. Heather Kaufman, Dr. Heather Kaufman is with me, and she has the Anchorage Foot and Ankle Clinic. She's a podiatrist. That means she takes care of feet, and she's especially into helping runners and supporting the local running community, which I really appreciate. Thanks for being here.
Sure.
Let's talk about a couple of other kind of injuries you run into. I think that the injury, I mean, I've had plenty of injuries, but when I think about my feet, it's like twisted ankles coming down wrong, ow, and then like I'm out of commission for a really long time. Mm-hmm. I guess, what's that all about? Is there any solution other than just waiting a really long time? and like, is it just being a klutz? I mean, there's no way to avoid that other than just paying attention to what you're doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So sprained ankles are very common. A sprain is basically an injury to the ligaments that support the ankle. And unfortunately, once you have an ankle injury, like a sprain, an injury to the ligament, it can make your ankle a little bit more unstable. It can and make you a little bit more prone to re-injury. With sprains, the key to managing sprains is to rehab them as soon as possible. You know, I see patients that have had really bad ankle sprains to where, you know, they're like, when it originally happened, my ankle was really swollen and bruised and I couldn't bear weight on it. And kind of like you said, I just sort of waited it out, didn't do anything about it, just kind of ignored it. And eventually it went away, but now I'm unstable. So really rehabbing it, physical therapy is key. In a really severe ankle sprain where if you can't bear weight on it right after the injury occurred, or even a couple of days after the injury occurred, that's a pretty severe ankle sprain. First few days, rest it, ice it. There's something called RICE therapy, rest, ice, compression, elevation. But with those patients that have an acute injury, I really do try to get them into physical therapy very quickly.
Get to the doc and get a physical therapy referral. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because you will thank yourself 2 years later when you don't have another sprain.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm not going to lie. Ankle injuries do take a long time to fully recover from. And, you know, you ask pretty much any doctor and they're going to tell you it's a year until you're really kind of back to where you were pre-injury status. And that's just how the body heals, unfortunately. Yeah, it doesn't mean that you can't run it. But, you know, by the end of the day, you may have a little bit more tenderness or a little bit more swelling.
Well, thing is always I return to, because I enjoy outdoors so much, I always go back to doing stuff too soon and then it hurts again and it takes longer.
Yeah. I mean, you do have to, there is that period of taking it a little bit easier and maybe modifying your activities a little bit. Things that can help, certainly bracing, lace-up. There's various types of lace-up braces that can be worn to help stabilize the ankle. Higher top shoes certainly will help. if there's an issue with swelling, like a little, just a neoprene compression sleeve can really help with the swelling. And even that can provide a little bit more of that sort of support to the ankle and stability. Really helps a lot. There's something called proprioception, which is your brain's understanding of where your body parts are in space, especially your foot. When you have a ligament injury, proprioception is inhibited. And that's part of the reason that you tend to re-sprain. So just having something like an ankle brace or a compression sleeve or something that's sort of connecting your foot to your leg helps the brain to understand where the foot is in relationship to the leg to keep you from rolling again.
I never would have thought of that. That's so interesting. Yeah. So what about, you know, when we think about backcountry activities, hiking, backcountry skiing, where you're using your feet probably even more than a runner does over a longer time period, seems like the problems that people get into on trips tend to be related to the skin and sort of rubbing and blisters and, you know, all kinds of little injuries, which don't seem like that big a deal, but they actually can be a really big deal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. A lot of my patients that have problems with blistering, there's a sock called the Right Sock, W-R-I-G-H-T. Greatest sock. It's a double layer sock, rubs against itself, doesn't rub against you.
Oh.
And so that's something I always recommend. You know, you want to look for socks that have kind of that sweat wicking material on them. Because again, when socks get kind of wet, they're going to tend to be a little bit more sticky, kind of stick to your skin, rub and irritate. Changing your socks, you know, making sure you're changing your socks, even if you have to stop your hike, sit down, change your socks. It's really important. You know, if your feet are blistered and painful, you're not going to go very far. Mm-hmm. So,
And it's sort of as soon as you start to feel that heat, that don't wait, right?
Right. Exactly. Absolutely. You know, keep blister Band-Aids with you. That's certainly important. You know, different coverings for areas that may tend to be more apt to rub and irritate. One of the things that can be an irritant, too, is just within the shoe itself, inseams. Some shoes have very prominent inseams, you know, where they've sewn the two parts of the shoe together. And so be on the lookout for that. Make sure you're feeling the inside of the shoe. If there is something that feels like it might be very prominent or in an area that might tend to rub and irritate the skin, maybe put some moleskin over it. Maybe, again, either like a double layer sock or, you know, a hiking liner first and then your sock over that just to give you a little bit more protection. Those are just really simple things you can
do. Right. So it's a lot of it's preparation.
Absolutely.
And also, like we were saying with the running shoe, you know, just make sure your boots fit and that you're, and then when you get, you know, good backcountry gear, you go to a boot fitter who really knows how to make sure that boot fits
perfectly. Not too loose, not too tight, you know, a really loose fitting boot. You are going to kind of move around in the boot a little bit too much, and you might shear just from your shoe, your foot kind of flopping around in the shoe. Something too tight, going to constrict, going to irritate, you know, so.
And some of the specialty ski shops, as we were saying about the running shops, will have somebody there who really knows how to do it, and sort of make an appointment with that person is worth it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So you enjoy running, you enjoy doing like the 10K and the half marathons. Have you found that you've been sort of integrated your work into the outdoor community and into your activities as well?
I think so. I mean, we do, again, this sponsorship
sponsoring
with Skinny
the races.
Ravens, and we go to all the different races. I know whenever I've done a lot of the races, it seems like every time I've done a race, there's always someone in front of me who falls down and injures himself. I swear it's not me tripping them. It just seems to happen. So in that way, I'm sort of...
Never get to get your best time, huh?
Pretty much. You know, when I go out and I do outdoor activities, I mean, obviously, you know, I impart all that advice and information I would give to patients. Of course, I, you know, take heed of my own advice. In that sense, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of cool to be able to have that expertise that you can share with people.
Absolutely.
So what's your biggest piece of advice? I mean, do you have, because we all want to stay away from you. We want healthy feet. We don't have anything go wrong. You mentioned sort of with the plantar fasciitis, getting the right shoes and, you know, same thing with, you know, sort of preparation for outdoor activities. Anything else you'd like to throw out there in terms of just good advice for staying healthy?
Number one, listen to your body. I mean, that's first and foremost. You know, if you're doing something that hurts, stop. good shoes, proper shoes, proper gear. I mean, that's always number one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wintertime, make sure you're keeping your feet warm. You know, frostbite is certainly.
You can easily do it, yeah.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's just being, you know, being sensible. And
don't just gut it out, yeah.
Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. don't try to do more than what you can. And, you know, if something doesn't feel right or if something is hurting, back off, you know, and don't push yourself further than you should. Unfortunately, I see patients who are kind of these weekend warriors who, you know, are kind of sedentary all week, and they get out and they're, you know, I'm going to go out, I'm going to do a 25-mile hike today, and that's mm-hmm. what I'm going to do. And then they unfortunately come back with, you know, stress fractures or blisters or tendonitis or, you know, any number of things. And so, you know, don't be a weekend warrior. Don't try to push yourself well beyond what your body can tolerate. You know,
just
listen
add a
to
little
your body.
Bit each time. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Just add a little bit, slowly build up. You know, if you're not a runner and you're just trying to get into running, don't make a 10K your first race.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start off slow. Start off with a 5K or a 2K and build your distance.
Mm-hmm.
Get the right shoes. Get the right advice on shoes.
And something I'm getting from you is if you do have an injury or feel like you're getting an injury, don't stay away from the doctor. You know, it's better to just have it checked out and maybe get over it much quicker.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Heather. It's been fascinating. I've learned a lot. It's a great, great byproduct of this for me. I get to have a doctor here to ask her anything I want. Dr. Heather Kaufman with the Anchorage Foot and Ankle Clinic on Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth. Please stay with us. Our next segment comes from our Trail Tell series, the event we record that is put on by Alaska Trails. In this installment, Sarah Mixon, a new Alaskan, has a story about a doomed rainy trip with friends.
So I moved to Anchorage, Alaska from Orange County, California in the winter of October 2015. I fulfill most stereotypes of Southern California people, and no one in their right minds would consider me outdoorsy. I had never gone on a hike before moving to college, I don't eat fish, and on the day that I found out I would be moving to Anchorage, I ironically received a luggage tag that reads, "I love not camping." Despite being pretty much the exact opposite of what someone would imagine someone moving to Alaska would be like, I decided to move up here anyways. I struggled with the cold and the dark, mostly the dark, but I decided to put myself out there and take advantage of the wonderful opportunities that living in the last frontier has to offer, which brings us to Memorial Day weekend 2017. We decided to go down to Seward for the weekend, along with what seemed like the rest of Anchorage. We knew that the likelihood of rain that weekend was high. I mean, it's Seward. So what better way to test our luck than by purchasing a 4-hour non-refundable kayaking excursion? That weekend, there was 100% chance of rain. I went to school in Seattle, and I had never seen 100% chance of rain on the weather forecast. My attendance was not looking promising that weekend, but I recently started to date a born and raised Alaskan and was trying to impress him. So on the day of the trip, I was in the driver's seat ready to make the journey down. It's the day of our kayaking trip, so naturally, since I'm from Southern California, I have to describe to you what I wore. I wore hiking shoes, yoga pants, a cotton jacket, and a water-resistant rain jacket that was completely saturated within the first 30 minutes of being outside. At this point, I am really embracing my "I love not camping" luggage tag. Our kayaking trip starts with a 45-minute uncovered boat ride, naturally going against the wind, so our face is being pelleted with rain the entire time. We finally get to the spot where we're supposed to get into our kayaks, and I realize they're not planning on docking this boat. No, they're not even planning on parking it onto the beach. Everyone else got the extra tough memo, but this chick in her hiking boots did not. So everyone effortlessly jumps out of the boat into the water and walks ashore. The captain decides that I should be the last one out of the boat since, you know, I'm wearing hiking shoes. And the plan is, as a wave is going into the beach, I'm going to exit the boat onto the ladder that's going to be leaning up against the boat. My friend's going to pick me up and carry me onto the shore. Hashtag total SoCal move. This plan sounded pretty foolproof to me at the time. So the captain counts down, 3, 2, 1. I exit the boat, I get on the ladder, and the boat starts to float away. It is literally me standing on this ladder in the middle of the water that's leaning up against nothing. I quickly realize this plan was not foolproof. I leap off of the ladder, probably the only time my dance minor has ever come into use. And my friend catches me. We both land on shore. And that same wave that was supposed to keep me balanced onto the ladder, that same wave crashes over me. As if I wasn't already wet enough, now my socks are wet, my pants are wet, and my cotton jacket is soaking wet. Keep in mind, this is just the start of the 4-hour kayaking trip. At this point, I'm like, okay, whatever, you're already out here. You might as well take advantage, maybe learn a little bit about more about Alaska, get to see some beautiful views, maybe get an Instagram, who knows. And so we start paddling, and we get to see beautiful waterfalls and majestic wildlife, and we end up paddling to a mountain. I turn to our tour guide, and I ask, hey, what mountain is that? He goes, I'm not sure, but I don't think it's Denali. I was like, yeah, no, I don't think it's Denali either. So at this point, I am freezing cold, soaking wet, and the most interesting fact is that the mountain I'm looking at in Seward might not be Denali. After what felt like an eternity, we finally finished the kayaking portion of our trip. Our tour guide tells us that he's gonna start a fire for us while we wait for the uncovered boat to come pick us back up. I literally start to get teary-eyed because I'm so excited to know what it feels like to be warm again from this fire. Those happy tears soon went away when I realized that the tour guide was using wet moss to start this fire. As you clearly can tell, I am not outdoorsy, but even I knew this wasn't gonna start a fire. At this point, I am so over this kayaking trip. The uncovered boat finally comes back, and this time they decide to park it on the beach. How convenient for everyone else, right? And so we head back into Seward. I only cried a little bit, but I told myself it was all gonna be worth it because it was gonna be a great photo at the end of it. When we finally get back into Seward, we looked at the photo, and I realized I'm not in the photo because the tour guide is covering me with his thumb. But in all seriousness, despite not being able to feel my toes and learning nothing new about Alaska, nor getting a really cool Instagram pic, that was a trip that I will always treasure and one that really is so unique to my time here in Alaska. I still don't consider myself outdoorsy, but I know that as I leave for graduate school next month that I'm leaving a much better person, and it's thanks to Alaska and the amazing friends I have here.
That was Sarah Mixon, recorded at Trail Tales, the Alaska Trails event. You can learn more at outdoorexplorer.org. And that's all for today's show. I want to thank Ann Thomas of Body and Balance Physical Therapy, who started us out. Then we heard from Toshi Hamazaki and Pamela Meslick from Alaska Outdoors. Heather Kaufman was our podiatrist from Anchorage Foot and Ankle Clinic. Producer of Outdoor Explorer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer is Hannah Duro. I'm Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.